Piska Lamed Gimel, which is a continuation of the Gemara, which we started last time, from Masechet Shabbat, Daf Yud Aleph. Last time we'll just read the Gemara. Va'amarav bar Machseya, Amarav Chama bar Guria, Amarav, imiyu kola yamim dio va'agamim kol musim. If all of the oceans were ink, the agamim kol musim, and all of the reeds were pens, v'shamayim yiriyot, and all of the heavens was parchment for paper to write on, v'chol bnei adam lavlarim, and if all of the people in the world were scribes, ein maspikin lichtov chalala shel rashut, we wouldn't be able, even with all that, to write the volume, the space, which is needed in order to run the governments. Mikra, and this is where we got up to. What is the pasuk where we learn it from? Brings a pasuk from Proverbs 25. Amar Rav Masharshia, Shamayim larom va'aretz la'omek v'lev melachim in cheker. That the heavens are high, the land is deep, and the hearts of kings is without estimate. Or is it's just like it's the you can't get all the way up to heaven. It's you can't understand how difficult it is for to be a king and to run a government. As Rav Kook elaborated on that last week. Mikra, where do we learn the pasuk from, etc. Sidrei chevra bnuyim al pi musagim hanogim ben binyanim aruchaniim. Right? When we talk about running a people, running a government, running a social framework, it's based on, first of all, spiritual topics. Betochen ha-musar ha-tzedek va-yosher b'dat Elohim ve-erech ha-kdusha u-pu'ulata ba-olam. Right, the first topic in running a country has to be justice, honesty, knowledge of God, the ways of holiness, and how to implement them in the world. Because that's the first thing, right? Before taxes, before what type of government, socialist, communist, or democracy, anything before that, you have to have a direction, as the Mesilat Yesharim writes, that if you're going to put the ladder over here or the ladder over there, you're going to get into two totally different directions. And therefore, first of all, you have to define what are the ideals, the justice, the holiness, etc., where you want to go. Ben binyanim achomrim hamdiniim haekonomim. On the other hand, there is also the physical, political, economical aspects of running a state. Vehim tluyim b'rov inyan zebazeh. And on the whole, these two issues, also the physical and also the metaphysical, the spiritual, really are intertwined with each other. They're interdependent. Kidat kedivrei Rambam b'morei Nevuchim, as the Rambam writes in the Guide for the Perplexed in the first part, chapter 25, al pi, based on the pasuk of Jacob's ladder, v'nei malachei Elohim ulim v'yordim bo, that the angels go up and down Jacob's ladder. Besulam ha-mutzav arza ve-roshom magia ha-shamayma. The Torah describes the ladder as one which is firmly based on the ground, but whose top reaches the heavens. Sha-chokhma Elohit ha-ola le-mala b'rosh ha-sulam yesh la mevo gadol b'chokhma ha-medinit hayoredet lemata besofo. As the Rambam explains in the Morei Nevuchim, that the godly wisdom, which the angels, as if it were, learn in the heavens, those godly ideals, the idea is not to keep it in the heavens, but for them to come down. The Rambam there is midayek, that first it says olim, they go up, and then it says yordim. Because you might have thought otherwise. In the kindergarten, the way they describe angels, we would think that angels are in the heavens and they come down and sometimes they'll go back up. The Rambam is medayik the exact opposite. The major job of the angels, malach, is a shliach. It's a messenger. Their main job is in this world. If so, so what do they do in the heavens? They go up to the heavens to learn the ideals which they then bring down to this world. And the Rambam says it's not just the angels. The Nevi'im are also angels. And that's the job of the prophets. The prophets are also, their idea is that they can also transmit on that godly channel, but it's not enough to talk to God. The job of the Nevi'im, of the prophets, is to bring down the messages and how to apply those godly ideals in this world. And that's what the Rambam stresses, Sulam Mutzav Arza. Not just that the ladder is half in the heavens, half on the earth, but it's firmly planted on the earth. The idea is to bring those metaphysical ideas, to translate them into pragmatic, practical ideas in the physical world. Regarding our topic, Rav Kook says we're talking about how to run a country. That's a midrash. There's a midrash that says that the angels from Eretz Yisrael were going up as Yaakov was leaving, and the angels from Chutz Laretz were coming down. That's the type of parsha where inevitably, even if I would never see midrash, I would know that there are going to be a lot of midrashim on that. Anyway, Rav Kook continues. Ve'im chelek echad mi'ele hashnayim, rabu anafim, ad she'i efshar lakifam beskira enoshit. Says the spiritual world is big and deep and infinite enough. The physical world and how to run a government, as we saw last week, is also infinite. Kal v'chomer b'shneim yachad b'yotam mesubachim v'nechazim b'zeh. So how much more so is it complicated if you take two infinite fields, the physical and the metaphysical, and you put them together? That's something like two times infinity and squared, because it's everything you have to apply and multiply by each other. Rav Kook says you can't even begin to fathom. Yeah.
So does that mean that this whole sugya is talking about a Mashiach type government? In other words, if we're saying that the reason why it's so complicated, there's just not enough ink to write it all down, is because we have to balance the spiritual and the physical together. So then it would suggest that a government that is not involved in the spiritual very much doesn't have a supply of it.
What we saw last week, where Rav Kook explains the first part of this Agarata, that he's also applying it even to the, as we spoke last week, about the difference between the Tsarist Russia and those who wanted to overthrow it and make a communist revolution, a socialist revolution. And
so
even there,
what are you saying now?
So also there, when Rav Kook here talks about holiness and metaphysical and justice, those are ideals which man, even secular man, even the Rishaim, when they run a country, they have to deal with, to a certain extent. You need a justice system. You need an economic system.
Say that. But justice, one could argue, is part of the physical realm.
Yeah. Rav Kook put it in the metaphysical realm. That's in the first. B'tochen ha-musar ha-tzedek va-yosher. Okay. Now, what we saw last, just to answer your question, what we saw last time is obviously this is the... what's true, if an idea is true, it may apply to this type of government on this level and another type of government on a different level. Okay? The bottom line that we saw last time is that don't think that it's simple to run a government, and don't think that by overthrowing it and changing everything, you're going to fix the situation. Adraba, you'll probably make more damage than good. Where Rav Kook here is talking about today is going more into the details based on the pasuk. By the way, we didn't explain where's the pasuk. Just to finish off, Shamayim larom va'aretz la'omek. Rav Kook is deducing, where did the rabbis learn this from the pasuk in Mishlei, that the metaphysical or the spiritual or the ideal, even if you take God out of the picture, Rav Kook always talks about ideals as something godly and something spiritual, even if you're talking about an atheist's version of equality. Equality is an ideal, whether it's in the name of God or without. Rav Kook doesn't differentiate. He says the metaphysical field is so awesome, that's talking about the Shamayim. The physical field is also awesome, that's the Aretz. Ushneim mityachsim lelev melachim. And that's the continuation of the pasuk. Again, Shamayim larom, the Aretz laomek, the lev melachim in cheker. And the heart of kings also, infinite. Bityasdut hanaga hachevratit. Alkene in cheker. You can't even begin to examine, to understand. V'tzarich litnehig biyachas hasdarim haklaliyim hakavuim bizhirut yetera ubeinvat tzedek. You have to very, very carefully, when relating to the zdarim, to all of the different, how would you translate zdarim? The different topics. Hakvim b'ziru yiterov v'nvat tzedek, and deal with a lot of humility, realizing that you can't understand the complicatedness. L'yishayer militarev im shonim. This is the pasuk that Rav Kook mentioned at the end of the last piska. Not to be active with those who want to overthrow the system. Again, like we said last week, Rav Kook isn't saying be complacent. He's not saying don't try to fix the world. But he said do it in a natural way, not overnight. Vavadim mitparzim levela ulashchit kol seder atik hasorer b'chayim hamdiniim v'chevratim. Not to volunteer to be part of those over those servants or those who aren't ruling, who want to overthrow the those who rule. Yes, we'll do another piska. Lamed Dalet. Okay. Rav Yoshua Braid Ravidi Ikla Lebe Ravashi. He visited the house of Ravashi, one of the editors of the Talmud Bavli. Avdulei Igla Tilta. He prepared for him an Egel Mishulash. Now, there are a lot of different explanations what is an Egel Mishulash. Rashi in the Torah and also in the Gemara usually gives two explanations. One of them is that it is a three-year-old calf, which isn't such a calf anymore, which may be the reason why he gives the second explanation, which is the third child. That's an explanation. I was the third child, so I always remember the second explanation. And that's how the way he explains it here, is if you have the swearing look in Rashi, Egla Tilta, Shlishi Lebeten, the third child, Shehu Meshubach, that's why I remember it. Because he is the best. Because when a cow first gives birth, when she's young, she's not totally ready. That's like sometimes when a younger woman gives birth at the age of 14, right? The child isn't going to be as healthy on the average as somebody who gives birth at the more childbearing years. Ve'avlad rishon v'sheni eino bari. And the first and the second children are usually less healthy than the third. So it's considered a ma'adani, delicacy, the third calf. Amrulei, lito marmidi. So they said to Rav Yoshua, taste, we prepared this great delicacy, this veal. Amarlu b'tanita yativna. I am sitting in a fast, I'm fasting. They didn't ask him beforehand. After they shechted him, it turns out that he's fasting. Amar le velo savar le mar lahad Rav Yehuda, da amar Rav Yehuda lave adam tanito uporea. What you don't agree with Rav Yehuda, who says that a person can buy off his ta'anit and pay it back another time. In other words, instead of fasting today, so fast tomorrow. Amarlu ta'anit chalomu. I'm fasting because I had a bad dream. Next time, Bezrat Hashem, we'll learn what a book has to say about dreams. I don't know of anybody, aside from Freud, who talks about dreams as much as Rav Kook, especially in the second part of Masechet Brachot, Ein Haya. Most of Perek Tet, most of Chapter 9, is dealing with dreams, and there Rav Kook has a field day. So I imagine he'll do so here as well. So he says, and as we know, the halacha is a person has a bad dream. The minhag, not so much halacha, is to fast. The Amar of a Machsia, maybe I'll just add parenthetically, that the minhag today is, today we really don't fast, because today the chazaka is that most people, their dreams are shtuyot. They're just stupidity that's floating around in the subconscious, and we're not on that high level that we have like prophetic or semi-prophetic dreams. Some people do atavat chalom, you sit three rabbis together, and there's a certain nusach, it's found in the Olat Riyah and Rav Kook Sidur, to, if a person has a particularly disturbing dream, which is, seems particularly realistic, that's the custom, that's when you do atavat chalom. I don't remember. Okay, Rav Chama bar Gu Amar Rav Yafe Tanit Lichalom Keish Linoret, and he explains that not only did I have a bad dream, but our rabbis tell us that to fast after having a bad dream is like a flame sticks to flammable wool. In other words, it's something which is natural. Vam Rav Chizda Ubo Beyom, it has to be on the same day, and that's why I don't want to transfer it, even though you already given me the favor to slaughter this delicacy, I can't have it. V'amrav Yosef afilu b'Shabbat, even on Shabbat, and that's brought down the halacha by the poskim. But again, today, because we say that our dreams are not really straight messages from above, we don't really fast on Shabbat anymore. Rav Kook in Piskal Lamed Daled deals with the third veal, the three-year-old, or that special delicacy. What is the idea of the igla tilta? And why not only here, also in other places, several places in Shas, what the rabbis have to go into detail what he served him. Right? You say that he spread a nice spread. You know, he prepared. Rav Kook explains, Na'el l'chabed adam gadol. It's proper when you honor a respectable person, umitsuyan, an exceptional, special, great person, be'iglat yilta, as we find in the Shas, that was the custom, to serve him with this third child, veal of the third calf. Kinei, Yeshnam yitronot tivim, v'yitronot melachutim. There are two types of advantages in the world. One is a natural advantage, and the other is an artificial or man-made advantage. Right? This duality is something that we've come across before in Rav Kook. In Igeret Takana, for example, the famous Igeret where Rav Kook talks about love of Israel. He writes that love of Israel, also, there are two aspects. One is the essence, the segula, that is born into each and every Jew. That's their neshama, that's their nature. Rachmanim, Baishanim, Gomlei Chasadim, they're good, they're stubborn, they're idealistic, they have shame, they're kind. But there's also the segula, that which through a person's free will, that's what they choose. Okay, this duality is found several times, and here also, if we have time, maybe we'll see another example, which is closely connected with what we're going to see here. Lemashal, bibalei chayim, yitron ha-tivi, mitzad ha-tolada, b'mezeg tov, umutam, bari, umavri. Says, it's very healthy, and it's good for you, it's good for your system to eat an animal which is naturally a delicacy. But as Rav Kook is pointing out, it's not that he prepared it Chinese style or French style or with mustard or ketchup or this, that, or the other, fried or roasted. We're talking here that very often we find that the rabbis treated and honored each other with either a three-year-old calf or that third calf who was born healthy, who was born a delicacy. Not that man artificially turned him into a delicacy, but that he was born that way. V'yitaron malachuti ayidei pitum, on the other hand, most of, and this is the veal that we eat today, is through pitum, through stuffing the calf, overstuffing him, right? Somebody once explained to me how it's done. It's actually, you see in Masechet Shabbat, also they discuss how they used to do it with the chickens, that they just take as much food as possible and stick it all the way down into their stomach and just to bloat him, because naturally, an animal, just like a healthy person, once he's satisfied, he's satiated, he's not going to eat more. On the other hand, the farmer wants him to be super heavyweight, okay? So therefore, that's the second way, and that's the man-made artificial way of turning the calf into a delicacy. Oshar shinuyim malachutiim. Like we said, frying it, chopping it, sautéing it, Chinese style, Italian style. So these are the two types of delicacies. Ha-hevdel shebineihem. What's the difference between the two? And why did the rabbis prefer the first over the second? Hu ki yitrona yitarona tivi. The advantage of the advantage. It's a nice term. The advantage of the natural advantage over the artificial advantage. Ala malachutiyu, shativi lo yaseh al yedei yitrono chisaron binyan acher. It's a very ingenious thought. And it's sort of connected with what we saw in the previous passage. That when God makes a delicacy, he has it all figured out, just like we saw. He's the only one who can know how to run a government and how to be good also to the upper class, also the lower class, also to the animals, also to the fish, also to this, also, right? Tov Hashem lakol, rachamav al kol ma'asav. How you can be good to everyone at the same time, man can't figure that out. Only God, who has a bird's eye view and knows exactly what's good for everything. So when he makes something naturally good, it's not going to be a good which is going to come on the account of something else. Right? If you fry and saute and add olive oil and everything, you might bring a problem of cholesterol. Right? It might be tasty, but it's not necessarily going to be healthy. Or, if man makes something healthy, it's not necessarily going to be tasty. Or even if it is healthy and tasty, who says that another 50 years from now they're not going to find out that it really wasn't healthy? Whereas man's knowledge is limited, and we cannot take everything into account. And as opposed to nature, nature is balanced. That when God makes something naturally good, it's not going to come on the account of another topic. Ki briyut goreret briyut. When it comes to nature, it is unbelievable that Rav Kook is writing this more than 100 years ago. Because today, the idea of eating healthy and nature and ecological interests is very, very modern. Rav Kook is writing this 110 years ago, way before his time. Eating what? Yeah. And as a matter of fact, I know in Kibbutz Te'eliyahu, for example, their biggest money-making crop is organic. That's a very big topic today. A lot of people I know, especially those who are sick, or someone who has cancer, they say just eat organic, and it's a very big market. V'yitron TV b'frat echad ikari gorer acharav ot ma'alot tovot. And adrabah, not only is a natural, godly delicacy not going to hurt something else, right, by exaggerating it, but is going to bring you goodness in other topics as well. How much more so, it's not going to harm you. Once man comes into the picture, and again, Rav Kook is not, as we've said many times before, he's not saying that man should be passive. What he's doing, though, is he's saying, don't interfere with God's nature, with Mother Nature, as much as possible. Even if the man who's artificially going to turn something plain into a delicacy, say he reaches his goal, and it's very tasty, this I stressed with a pen in my book, because this is a very strong statement. Because he is, litamer is like lehit olel. He is, how would you say lehit olel? He's mistreating nature. He's tinkering with nature. But it's a stronger term. Litamer is like he's torturing nature. Yeah. It's like lahagbir kocho chutz letchunato hatoldatit. Right? What man does when he wants to make a delicacy is that he overloads on something. Right? Here's a basic sweetness in carrots. What do most chefs do? They put in even more sugar. Right? Or they take anything. Or what is bisli? Man has a natural, we like salt, right? We have a need for a certain saltiness in our blood, right? But what man does is he sees, okay, we like salt, let's make it double, okay? And then triple, and then, somebody told me once that that's what Coca-Cola does, that every couple of years they test and to see if their product is still sweet. And every so often they add a little more sugar, and it's like what's called the runaway theory. Because once you start, you just keep going and you keep going until you build up an immunity to it, and then you need more and more and more, right? So once man starts overloading and torturing nature, even if it's going to be good regarding something, it's going to make problems in other things. As my mother-in-law used to talk about that, so when the doctor put her on this vitamin and this mineral, and all of a sudden it would bother her kidneys, and then she'd have to take something else for the kidneys, and they have to take something else for that. And you know, once you start with, thank God we have medicines, but once the more you tinker with nature, the more you're throwing things out of sync. And this is something that Rav Kook is very, very much. He says, God created the world good, and try not to tinker with it as much as possible. We mentioned before that Brit Milah is not tinkering with nature. That is, the Abar Banel points out that that dogs and cats, they don't have an orla to take off. Man has the orla, has the foreskin, in order for man to take it off. That's not tinkering with nature, adurabha. That's like Rabbi Akiva, Turnus Rufus, we spoke about once, that man doesn't eat wheat or flour. We do need to take other natural ingredients, and together with sweat and effort and fire and cooking, and that's the way Rav Kook isn't saying stay in as a caveman, right? But what he is saying, especially in the modern man, and that's part of postmodernism, right? Rav Kook is dealing with modernism. Modernism says the more man controls, the better. We will conquer, and there is that aspect. Lo'ovda u'lishomra, redu ba'aretz v'kivshuva. Man is supposed to, majestic man, as Rav Soloveitchik calls it, is supposed to rule the world. On the other hand, don't adulterate the world. Don't throw things out of sync. Mm-hmm. Well, there we did have the Rambam, right? It's 800 years ago about nutritional value, but and there was it's something that Am Yisrael was always sensitive to, relative to the surroundings, right? Everybody knows the Black Plague, you know, that they say that Jews didn't suffer less than others, but it was simply because we used to wash our hands. And that's, you know, the Tilat Yadayim in Tahara, and that's something that the we were always a couple steps ahead of the going. This Piska rang a bell. There's a Tshuva Nigrot Moshe that Moshe Feinstein wrote about 30 years ago, where he was asked about raising veal. That apparently they found out that in America, there's a type of veal called white veal. I don't know if it still exists, but what they do is that they raise the calves in very close, very, narrow, and they're stuffed together. They can't move. They never bring them out to exercise. And the idea is, because if you let calves walk, use their muscles, so the muscle will be strong. And adrabah, they want the meat to be so soft. Calf, in general, is softer than the adult cows or bulls. But they didn't want it enough to be soft. They wanted it to be super soft, that it should just be very fat and flabby. And so they raised, and Rav Moshe Feinstein says that you should not buy that type of veal. You should participate in the boycott, because it's immoral. He says it's tsar ba'alei ha'chaim, and if you want to see it, it's in Igrot Moshe, Evena Ezer, Siman Sadi Bet. Which again, even if you're talking about veal, when man wants to make veal a delicacy, he does it, he can do it in inhumane ways, either by stuffing him or living in cramped quarters, etc., etc. And that's not good. Again, what is it? It's improving one thing on the account of something else. And that's not the way to run the world. That's not the way God created things. Hadashenut shal yedei ha-pitum, if you stuff a, what's the word? There's a word for when you stuff animals. Force feeding. Yafsid et ometz ha-chai v'kocho ha-bari v'chiyot tzebo. Rav Kook says inevitably it's going to harm the natural strength, the natural health of the animal. And then when a person eats it, he's not going to get the benefits. V'chein ha-davar gan ken b'yitronot ha-ruchanim shel bnei adam. Rav Kook says the same thing when it comes to spirituality. And here he starts a new topic. Ve'asita alav zer zahav. It says in the Mishkan regarding the Aron, the Torah was inside the Aron. But around the Aron, there was a zer, a crown. Amru chazal, zacha, naset lo zer. Lo zacha, naset zara lo. It's a play on words that the Torah is meant to be a zer, a crown. Which, by the way, a crown in Kabbalah, what is the idea of Keter as opposed to Chochman Bina? Chochman Bina is part of your brain. It's part of you. Keter is something which you put upon yourself. So to a certain extent, it's artificial, right? It's on you. It's being brought from the outside. The Torah, though, if you learn the Torah, it's a crown. In other words, take man in his most base stage, put the Torah on him, it brings out the best in man. On the other hand, if you take that same Torah and you don't do it properly, it becomes zara, a foreign body. And just like the crown could be a foreign body, the Torah could be a foreign body. And that's the chidush that Rav Kook is trying to get at. Just like naturally, don't artificially push nature. So too spiritually, you shouldn't artificially push yourself, overdo things in a way that it's not natural. Mi shetal teva nafsho nitkadesh, a person who's naturally holy, lo yigrumu bo yitronot aruchaniim ki intov v'shlemut. A person who is naturally holy, or who becomes holy in a natural way, again, through Torah, through learning the Torah, through adorning the crown, which again, this book is not part of my hand, but the idea is to bring it to become part of me. Rav Kook says that that is something which is very healthy, godly, natural, and you only gain from it. When you grow spiritually, slowly but surely, step after step, you only gain. There's no detriments, no drawbacks. Omnam, mi shenafsho lo nitaltal madrigot haramot be'etzem. But somebody who isn't really, hasn't risen to a high level, it's not part of him, it's not internal, but he's doing it artificially. Afal pi shekanai yitronot ruchaniim michochma v'torah ve'od ma'alot kahema. It may be that he's worked on himself and he's risen to higher levels, which is very good, very commendable. Hein domot ki yitron melachuti. Unfortunately, it could be artificial. Just like when man intervenes with nature on the physical level, he can throw things out of sync. So too, if you grow, and by the way, you see this in the yeshiva world sometimes, and that's part of the beauty of somebody who can spend a long time in yeshiva. If somebody's going to spend 5-6 years in yeshiva, you'll see his growth, you'll see his ups and his downs, and in the end, he will gain from it. But if you cut the process short, you can end up with unnatural and unreal spirituality, which doesn't last, and it's not Torah Tenet. I remember there was one guy in yeshiva, this was after I'd been 7 years in yeshiva, a younger boy, he was in Shana Aleph, Shana Bet, he used to come with me with a lot of questions, and a lot of the questions were the same questions that was from deja vu, things that I asked over the years, you know. Some of them were weird, some of them, you know, very clearly unnatural, you know. So if you learn Mesilat Yesharim, you know, so we would say, maybe I shouldn't go visit my parents for Shabbat. Just Bein Hazmani, right? I'll see my parents on Sukkot, I'll see my parents on Pesach, and the rest of the time I'll spend in yeshiva, and I'll never leave, right? Or he thought, you know, maybe you should fast, Bahab, you know, Shani v'Chamishi, you know, all these things that you'll find in Sfarim, you'll find in Musar books, the idea of fasting on Mondays and Thursdays and Mondays, and maybe there is a stage, if a person is on that spiritual level, that it will only do him good, and it comes like the Nazir. People used to ask Rav Kook about the Nazir, you know, why do you let him, you know, do these crazy things, you know, not to drink wine, to be a vegetarian, to not talk for 30 days straight, and all these, right, that's not natural. Right, that's going against what Rav Kook is saying here. Rav Kook used to say that the Nazir, that is his nature. He's on that level. It's not unnatural for him not to speak. Right, he's on a different level. Right, and the same thing, theoretically, if a person is so involved in spirituality that he wants to go a day without eating, right? Or he wants to really perfect his speech, he wants to do a tamid dibur, a day without speech. If that's your level, so fine. But don't push it. Don't skip stages. If you remember, we saw a similar idea in Chazon and Tzimchonut, where Rav Kook says that even though theoretically he believes in vegetarianism as an ideal, he says, if mankind isn't there yet, it does more harm than good. Just like we saw in the previous Piska, the world is constantly evolving, evolution, improving. But if you try and overthrow the government artificially and skip stages and fix the world overnight, that's not the world. Basara ma'amarot nivraha olam. Rav Tzvi used to quote the Maharal, that Maharal a lot. Why did God say Vayomer 10 times? Let there be this, let there be this, let there be this, let there. He could have done it in one ma'amar. The answer is our world is a world of stages. And all changes have to be hadragati, have to be gradual. That way they're real. If you try and change things overnight, it's artificial and it's not real. Also physically. Let's take that example. The Nazir was a vegetarian. And Rav Kook said, for him, it's great. That's part of the idea of Aselich HaRav. It's really the type of thing that every person should have a Rav who knows him, who knows where he's at, who sees his development, knows where he was 2 years ago, know how much he's advanced, and he can objectively, just like I, even though I was just a couple years older than this boy in Shana Aleph, I could already see and remember where he's at, what's real, and what's mugzam, what's artificially exaggerated. Alken, lo rot al yikrata isha shalem, sha chokhma yira vadat ya'atreu atarahu lemet vitivit asher lo ya'ata. Regarding also spirituality, regarding a ish shalem, like Rav Yoshua, who's coming to visit Rav Ashi, the proper way of honoring him is with a natural delicacy. Eglatilta. Na'el chabdo be'eglatilta, she'yitrono ha'goren ta'amo ha'tov, hu lo yitaro melachuti, al yedei inyan zar l'tivo. Again, Rav Kook is reminding us of the idea of zer, zar, zara, right? That it's not going to be artificial, unnatural. Shebitzdadim acherim yuchal lo lidkilku, ki im yitaron tiv'i shalem shu ach tov. That's only good. When something is, if you want something which is only good, it has to be natural. Okay? By the way, the Rambam talks about this. And Chazal alluded to it a little in the man, when they said that when Bnei Israel ate the man in the Midbar, it's a godly food, they did not have any wastes. They didn't need a bathroom. Why? Because if something is really suitable and natural, you don't have as much wastes as when you have, when you start eating garbage. And by the way, anybody who's changed diapers knows what I'm talking about. As long as the food is natural, especially mother's milk, it's different from when they start eating bamba in this week. True. Umani imin divrei akatu beparshat eshet chayil. How beautiful is the words of the eshet chayil at the end of Sefer Mishlei. Shiramza harambam zal b'morin vuchim al shlemut ha-chomer atov ha-mesayeh b'tivo la-shlamat ha-nefesh ha-chachama b'malotea b'omro gemalatu tov Velora kol yemei chayah. It's a beautiful diyuk here from Rav Kook, based on the Rambam. It says, Gemalat Utov, what is the Eshet Chayil? Also, Chazal say the allegory is the Torah. It gives you good and not bad. Why do you have to say good and not bad? As Rav Kook explains, if something is artificial, it usually, together with the good, comes a little bad in a different field. The Torah, or something which is really godly, not only is it good, but it's not bad. Tov v'lo ra, kol yemei chayah, for all the days of your life. And I think there are also two stresses here, another two stresses. One is kol, all the days of your life, right? Not just today, also when you're on the next step, when you're on the next step, when you're on the next level. As you gradually grow, your natural spiritual growth grows with you, as Rav Kook said. When it's a natural spiritual growth, then you have good all of your life. Okay? Don't go for this stage of life when you're at this stage of life. Okay? And that's also a nice diyuk in this pasuk. Kol yemei chayah.